Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. I'm your host, Monique Coven. I'm a certified trauma recovery coach, and this podcast is all about hope and recovery. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. So today I'm going to be sharing a conversation I had with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jean Shang. And Dr. Jean Shang is a clinical psychologist, and she actually works and serves in Singapore. She's a trauma survivor herself, and she's going to be talking about her training, her PhD in psychology, and what that was like, as well as her own healing journey. She's also a mother, and so she's going to be touching on complex trauma in parenting and some of the ways that we may find ourselves being triggered and what may be helpful when we are parenting. So I really hope you enjoy this rich conversation. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Monique.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I am so happy to have you. I know we've been trying to schedule a time to get together. We've developed a really nice friendship, and I think it's so cool how we can come together. You're in Singapore and I'm in Canada. And yet there's just this lovely connection. You know, you're a trauma survivor, as I am. And you're also, I'm not a PhD, as you are, in clinical psychology. But we both work with trauma survivors. Mm-hmm. So I know we're both passionate about this. And I thought we could have a chat, both from your personal experience as a psychologist, as a mom, you know, parenting with complex trauma and healing, as well as a trauma survivor healing.
Yes, thank you. That's a beautiful summary, and I just want to say that, like, this connection that we share in spite of never having met each other and living in two different parts of the world, this is really social media at its best, used at its best. So
I'm so grateful. All right, so maybe we could get started by something that you know, is interesting, and that's your training. So I'm curious to know, as you were training, did you learn about trauma and how it impacts the mind and the body?
If only you could see my face right now, because I'm smiling. No, that's the long and short answer. No, I did not. So my training was very based in cognitive behavioral therapy, so CBT, and when it comes to, like, trauma training, it's from the CBT angle only. That's the only one that I was trained in. And as we know right now, like, thoughts and how we think about things, they are helpful and they are important, but it's highly incomplete. And we really need to attend to the body. We really need to attend to the nervous system. We really need to attend to our emotions. That my training did not address, I would say, almost at all when it comes to trauma work. So I had to do a lot of my own studies outside when I graduated. I had to learn a lot more about trauma from attending workshops, from attending trainings, by seeking out and paying for my own external supervision with a trauma expert. Doing a lot of my own readings, listening to a lot of trauma podcasts like your own. And yeah, so that's pretty much actually how I actually came to know about trauma, not from my degree, which is really kind of sad. I do hope that things have changed. It's been more than 10 years since I studied. So I do hope things have changed, but I hear not very much. So yeah.
First I'm wondering, like, You know, when we're learning something, we always want to be able to connect with it in some way. So if you're a trauma survivor and you're hearing about CBT and that that's the way to treat people, what was that like for you?
Very
Yeah, I bet.
disorienting. Monique, I honestly felt like I was not cut out to be a psychologist. I had all the passion for it. I had a lot of my friends tell me that I have the qualities that could make a good psychologist. But when I did the training and it was so cognitive based, so much about thinking, it didn't really sit with my style. I'm a lot more with feeling. I'm a lot more with, I don't know, connecting relationally. And CBT is a lot more of, you know, it's like it looks a lot more at like realistic appraisals of things, which is important, a
Yeah.
very important skill. And I'm glad I learned that from CBT. And it's really honed me in that. But at the same time, I will also say that it just felt so incomplete. And for me as a trauma survivor to at that time, I didn't know I was a trauma survivor actually, but now knowing I was a trauma survivor and then only learning from the head, not from the body, not from the heart, it was I felt like I was the problem. Like I was missing out on something. Maybe I'm not cut out for this profession, as opposed to there's something incomplete or something, there's a gap in the training. So
Yeah.
that was my experience of that.
It's so interesting because what a common experience, I think, for also survivors who are given that modality. They're seeking help and they go to someone who is telling them about their thoughts. And, you know, I like the way you said realistic because it's like, oh, you're having a negative feeling or you're feeling afraid. Tell yourself the truth. I am safe. Okay, and as if that's supposed to, you know, change things. And so it can feel like just what you said, like you said, I'm not cut out to be a therapist. And so many people, including myself, I'm not doing therapy right. What is wrong with me?
Oh,
But
yes.
we start to now understand that it's not us. It's something is incomplete there in terms of the modality.
Absolutely. And it's so spot on you said that. Also because in Singapore actually we're very young in terms of our trauma training in Singapore. And so a lot of our trainings are really just CBT based or a few other things, but to find trauma informed practitioners is a lot harder. And I've had clients that come to me and they said that I felt like I was a failure at therapy because I've shifted from therapist to therapist and I just kept feeling like I was failing at therapy. And my heart just really went out to them because it's like, no, it's not you.
Yes.
And that repeats the message of their trauma as well, isn't it? That it's you are the problem.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah. Why can't
unfortunate.
you get this? Why can't you do this? You're not capable. There's something wrong with you. You're stupid. You know, the whole thing. So then you were
Yes.
able to get some trauma-informed training, is that it, on your own?
Yeah, I had to kind of look for it actually, Monique, because it was not covered in my master's or my PhD in clinical psychology. So the only trauma work that we did was, you know, CBT in PTSD back then. And I kind of had to look for my own training. So I attended external trainings. I found a trauma expert as my supervisor, and he really whipped me in a very good way, in a very, very good way. Like he really kept, you know, kept drilling me and honing my skills, and I would say that, yeah. So I felt like a really bad psychologist when I was doing my training, but when I did my other kinds of trainings, like emotion focus therapy and schema therapy in particular, it really just changed everything for me, because now I found something that fit my style. Now I found something, and I didn't realize that it actually was fitting to the part of me that was also a trauma survivor. Because back when I was only kind of practicing CBT, it was like I often felt, and I often asked my teachers this, like, okay, but what if like I get it in my head, but I don't feel it? Because then my behavior is not going to change. I'm still going to do the exact same thing. So I hear the logic, but I don't feel it, and so I'm not going to change. I'm going to stay stuck. And CBT has a lot of these kinds of terms, like, oh, then you're treatment resistant and things like that, which is again even more shaming for a trauma survivor. But when I moved on to do other kinds of trainings, like, yeah, like what I just mentioned, then this fit. And because now we're speaking the language of the body, of the heart, we are not discrediting the language of the head as well, which I love, because it's also one part of it. It's just that it's more complete right now, because now we're speaking in terms of like there are various parts of you, not just your intellectual part, which is often the part that we know very well, that we've been trained by our education institutions, regardless of whether you're studying psychology or not. Like, that's the part that's received the most, intellectual nurturing. So we know that part, but a lot of us don't know the other parts of us, our bodies, our emotions, or rather, we've forgotten these parts of us. So doing trainings that actually emphasizes these other parts, like, that made it more complete for me, and then I just really felt like, okay, no, I can do this. Like, this flows for me. I'm convinced by this, and so I feel connected to the way the principles are applied. I feel connected to how therapy is de delivered more in these modalities, and I could therefore feel more authentic in how I deliver it to my clients as well. So
Yeah.
yeah.
So what about for yourself personally? I'm trying to see where did you fit in with your own kind of, I guess, like awakening to who you are?
I would say that happened when I burnt out. It's a pained laughter, but that happened when well, essentially the old way of living couldn't sustain itself anymore, because I was running at a pace of, I mean, metaphorically running at a pace of like multiplied by five. Like, I was doing a lot. I was doing my PhD, I was doing my master's training, I was also teaching, lecturing, tutoring, I was involved in outside uni activities. I was doing a lot, and I was also trying to take care of everyone's emotions. I was trying to please everybody, and that is a huge job to take on, a huge responsibility that shouldn't be taken on, but I was doing all that. And it came to a point where I couldn't anymore. And when I started to realize I couldn't move at the same pace, or I couldn't move, or I was starting to feel pretty resentful, I was crying a lot more, I was anxious a lot more, I was even feeling a bit avoidant of people. I think a part of me was actually avoidant of even more energy being drained from me, because I was already exhausted. Then I was like, something is wrong here. Something is really wrong here, and I don't know what it is. I thought the problem was me again. Like, something's wrong with me. I'm weak. It was It's so easy for trauma survivors to target ourselves as the problem. But when whether or not I'm targeting myself, it was very clear I couldn't do everything anymore. And so I had to pull out of some things, and That was very painful for me because a lot of my identity is rooted in being a responsible, reliable person, being showing up for things like people knew me as the energetic one, but I had no energy left to for anything. So I had to pull out of some of my extracurriculum activities. And when I told the person that I had to pull out, I was filled with so much shame because I just really felt like I was letting him down. I was letting the people that I was helping down. And his response, on the other hand, it changed everything for me because here I was covered in my shame, and his response was not to frown or look away or cringe or give me something patronizing. He looked at me like he actually looked deep into me and he said, "You're bleeding." Yeah.
Wow. What did that do for you?
I just couldn't stop crying after that. It was an incredibly vulnerable experience for me because I don't think I've ever been seen that way, where I've been seen and loved when I'm not performing. You know, like I've always been loved and worthy, or at least I felt I was loved and worthy because I was able to do everything. So it was a very conditions-based love. But his response to me was, it was like unconditional love and loved even though I was struggling. And it was like he cared about me, not about what I could do or give. And that was I would never forget that. That really moved me. And subsequently he told me, "Gina, I want you to see my therapist, if you're open to that, because I think you could do with some support." So again, it was for me rather than using me to help out with other things. Like it just, I don't know, it was incredibly moving, and I think I never tasted that before. That, yeah.
I'm just sensing that level of care, and seeing you in your suffering. And I think that's often what's missing in our experiences when we have this kind of, developmental trauma or ongoing childhood trauma. And then to have someone show us like empathy and care, it is very transformational.
Yes. It's like you don't even realize that you are lacking in, like your needs are not being met, and you actually have very necessary, valid human needs until you experience it, and then you realize, oh my gosh, like there was a lack here. I didn't even know that.
So, wow. So I'm interested to hear about your therapist. How did that go?
Oh, my therapist. Well, the first time I met her, I was anxious. Obviously, it was my first experience, and I kind of was just telling her that I'm struggling a lot. I'm burning out. I'm struggling a lot, and the problem is because, probably because I'm too vain. I'm egoistic. I'm selfish. I'm just thinking about myself. I don't want to help anymore, maybe because I'm a selfish person. And she kind of just called out that bullshit. She just looked at, sorry, can I say bullshit? Anyway.
I'll
Okay.
bleep it out. No, I'm kidding. Of course.
Yeah, she called it out and she just looked at me and she said, "Jean, the reason you're struggling, like it's not your fault." And when she first said that, I just looked at her and I looked at her and like I really didn't believe her. I just thought she was patronizing me. I said, how could it not be my fault? Like, the reason I'm struggling as badly as I am is because I place so much value in all these external achievements. That's why I keep pushing myself so hard. That's why I'm burning out, because I think I need to get all these grades because I want to look good there, because I want to look my best. That's why I'm exercising a lot. The reason why I'm struggling the way I am is because I have warped values. I'm placing too much importance on things that probably don't actually matter. So it's my fault. It's because I'm vain. And she just looked at me quite steadily and she said, "No, Jean. Yes, you might be vain, but even if you are, the reason why you're struggling the way you are is because of the environment that you've been in that has conditioned you and made you vulnerable, therefore, to start developing these needs to fill yourself up in this way and to find your worth in these ways." And then when she said that, it just hit me. Like, I had never ever seen myself in context of my environment.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's such a clear example of when we're so conditioned, we don't see any other perspective until we do.
Yes. It's like your world just becomes this one way, or this is the reason, this one reason. It's you. Very often it's you. And suddenly it's like she just pulled me. It's almost like she just told me, "Wait, hang on, step back, step back, step back, step back, and look at this whole thing here. And look at this whole thing and tell me, anybody who is in this environment, would they not develop some kind of difficulties or challenges of some sort?" And that made a lot of sense to me when she did that. So then I was just like, that made a lot of sense. And I think trauma-informed approaches tend to really hone in a message that, okay, now I make sense. Now my struggles make sense. Now things make a bit more sense. And that was my experience of that. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's so great. And it's in a way, it's like a rebuilding or a process of kind of rebuilding who we are, because we think our identity is a certain way, and then we start to see, wait a minute, it's not.
Yes.
So yeah, maybe you could talk a bit about your experience with that. Like, what was it like the building of the sense of self, if you thought that you were just, achieving and worthy this way, and some of those other things?
That's a very good question, because very often, like, we hear about the struggle and then we hear about the end and we don't hear about the in between and what that's supposed to look like. And a lot of us spend years in that in between stage, isn't it? So when she first like called things out for me, as it was, and put things in context for me, it was really like a light bulb moment. It was really like, right, so this now this makes sense, but hang on, then who am I? It was like, okay, like that all sounds great, but then suddenly a part of me kind of went, oh no, but then who am I now? Like, if you take away my identity as somebody who's vain, selfish, just, competitive, egoistic, if you take all that away from me, then what am I left with? And that was quite liberating and terrifying at the same time, because suddenly I didn't really know. It's almost like somebody removed something from you, but your hands are now empty and you're like, now what do I have to hold on? And I was like, so if you're saying that this is my conditioning that's made me like that, then then who am I? Like, who am I without that kind of a conditioning? Who am I supposed to be, and who am I? And I kind of was hoping she would give me the answer. I was hoping she would tell me exactly who I was, and I could just go ahead and be that person. like she's holding like a magic ball or something. But she's really good. She didn't play into my baiting, and she just looked at me and she said, "Yes, Jean, who are you?" And she always repeated those words back to me, "Who are you, Jean? Who are you?" And so that became something that my subconscious would say, like, "Who am I? Who am I?"
I like
And
that.
yeah, it was frustrating though, Monique. Like, I'm not gonna romanticize it. It was quite frustrating, and it just really it was like, okay, I should know who I am by, I don't know, the end of this month, or by the end of this course, or but no, it doesn't work that way. And because I didn't know, like, okay, you take all that away from me. Not that she took it away from me, but it's more like, okay, now it's clear, and so that has been automatically removed from me. Then who am I? And I kind of felt like a blank slate, and I felt very empty, and I kind of felt like, you know what, I need to now I kind of think I need to recreate myself, or rather I need to think, what do I want to stand for? Who do I want to be? So I at that time I had some people that would say things to me like, "Jean, you're very kind," or, "Jean, you're very sensitive and empathetic to people." And I felt like through them I was getting a bit of a clue of who I was in their eyes, and that kind of helped a little bit. But at the same time, when they said that, what was more like surprising to me, or even chilling to me to a certain degree, was that I would hear them say that, and I would be grateful to receive such, kind and generous words of affirmation. And then at the same time, there would be a quiet voice inside me that would say, "All right, so now tell me that I'm pretty." It was like that voice in me just discredited everything, like, did not care. Who cares about kindness? Who cares about compassion? Who cares about empathy? Just tell me I'm pretty. And that, I never said that to them, obviously, but I heard that in myself. Or it wasn't an audible voice, but it was a sense. Like, I could feel those words in me. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? Like, how come I don't even feel anything? I don't feel any attachment to kindness, to generosity, or any of these traits that people are saying, but I feel so much attachment to just being pretty, which to me felt like, huh? Like, really? I mean, okay, being pretty can be nice, but why am I so attached to the superficial? Why am I so attached to the external? How is it that internal beauty means nothing to me at all? Or at least feels nothing to me at all. And there was something I was very aware of. And so I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know what's going on here. It could be my conditioning that's made me like just really attach myself to external appearances, looks. And it makes sense too, because in my family culture, like, we are often, praised or rejected, or not rejected, but constructive criticism that does not feel very constructive about our looks, for example, our weight, what we're eating, whether we've got a pimple on our face, there's a lot of emphasis on that. So when I forced myself to kind of think painfully about the environment I grew up in, I was like, you know what, that makes a lot of sense why I would be so attached to externals, because that is what my caregivers valued the most about your external appearance and successes on the external side. They didn't really tell me, I never really heard my caregivers tell me things like, "You're kind, you're empathetic, you care for people, you're compassionate." I never heard that. I only heard like, "You're pretty," or, "Oh, you look like you've put on weight," or it was all to do with that. So that started to make sense to me, and And I kind of felt like, okay, you know, I need something's got to change here. And I know that I actually like internal beauty is so beautiful and important, and I see other people feeling the like feeling and tasting the beauty of internal beauty, but I don't, and I want to be like them. So I started to kind of observe how people who were kind, how they were behaving. I started to open myself and look out for these internal beauty, these, you know, humility, compassion, and I started to feel it for myself or watch them demonstrate it to other people. I would notice these moments and I would feel it, and I would be like, yes, that is beautiful. And that then slowly I started to feel it. So I think sometimes our heads might know that, like logically, internal beauty matters a lot more and is more lasting than external beauty. And you read a lot of quotes that talk about that. So logically, we know that. But because of our conditioning, then our feelings take time to catch up with with our logics and what we know in our brains. So I had to experience that as well.
Boy, that speaks, I mean, volumes. I'm sure people could really relate. And I think, I can talk from my own personal experience, but again, I think people can really relate in that, some of the caregivers, because of their own trauma histories as well, they might not have learned about compassion and kindness, and that, in my case, it was very much the same way. It was focused on the physical beauty, and you'll get noticed if you look this way and if you're shaped this way. And there was no talk at all about anything internal, and it was just completely missing. So, and then you become a teenager, and it's all focused on the exterior as a teenager. You don't hear kids, although it's changing now, thankfully. But in my day, you didn't hear people having conversations about how great it is to be kind and empathetic and stuff like that. So, it makes a lot of sense. And so that was how you kind of started to learn about those things for yourself.
Yes, that was how I started to actually feel those things within myself. I started, it's almost like I had to reconnect with, I do believe, Monique, that we actually, our bodies, our souls, our blank slates when we first come into the world know all these things. But our conditioning tends to disconnect us from our knowing. And usually I mean, I hear that that happens around the age of like after 3 years old. That's when the conditioning really sets in a little bit more and disconnects a bit more. But children before that age, they tend to really know. They're very, very intuitive. And so, yeah, I kind of felt like I was starting to reconnect back with the knowing that I had before my conditioning disconnected me from it. So that was my experience.
I was thinking, even of myself. I was never shown empathy, and all of that was not discussed at all. And life was hell, and growing up, and I always wanted to be away from my home. And I remember we had a nursing home that was in front of my high school, and I found my way there. And I can remember there was a bunch of people in wheelchairs just sitting there, and this feeling overcame me. It was very strong. It was very visceral, and I just put my hands on their hands, and our eyes locked, and I kept going back to the nursing home, and I would have that feeling, and it was so powerful. And it wasn't until later that I realized that feeling was empathy, and it was something that I was experiencing, and it was powerful. But if you had not experienced that, before, you don't know that that exists. And
Yes.
so I agree with you that I think we come into the world with these, with the knowing, but then when we're not kind of shown it in the felt sense, we lose touch with it, you know?
Yes. And I think it's so beautiful that we forgot it, but it, I mean, you sharing that is like, it's as though your body, your soul was remembering it and leading and drawing you back to it. It was like, it just felt to me, I just have this sense of like, it was other parts of you were saying, hey, let me show you who you are as well. So yeah, that's beautiful.
Thank you. It was very transformational for me. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was the idea of, parenting when you are a trauma survivor can be very triggering when you have a history of complex trauma. So I was wondering if you'd share a little bit about your own experience as a parent.
Yes, sure. So I have a daughter who is 3 plus this year, and you know, this year being COVID lockdown, everybody being together, having to work from home and parent at the same time, not having any help. It's been intensely challenging on top of the usual challenges of parenting with a trauma history. So I did notice, and for me, it started even before COVID though. Like I started to notice that when she was about 2 plus, I started to feel quite tense around her, anxious around her, and I noticed I would only breathe when she's not around me. Like I would actually relax, my body would relax when she's not around me. But at other times, when she's around, it's almost like I'm just holding my breath. And I didn't really feel this as much when she was a baby, so I did notice that difference. And I was wondering, okay, what's going on here? And I mean, knowing about our inner child, and also about how sometimes when your child is the age, hits the age that you went through trauma when you were a child, that kind of, I was wondering whether it was connected to that as well. That's why I was struggling more when she hit this age. So that was something I was already experiencing, and I mean, this year, like, so that was already building, right? And then COVID happened, and I would find myself only being able to spend like 5 minutes with her, and then I'll be like, okay, sweetheart, I need to go to my room for a while. And obviously she would protest because it's like 5 minutes, you know, not that she said 5 minutes, but it's a very short time. And I would feel so much guilt. And I remember I was thinking to myself, like, Jean, like, what's wrong? Like, how come you can't even spend more than 5 minutes with her? Something is wrong here. What's happening here? Like, there's something happening. You're getting triggered. I don't know what it's about, but there's something happening that you kind of need to look at, because if you're only able to spend 5 minutes of quality time with her, that there's something, you know. So I was like, okay, there is something going on here. So I talked to my therapist about that, and I was like, I don't know whether it's some kind of like trauma that I went through when I was around her age, but I definitely wouldn't be able to remember it because I don't remember anything from the time before I was 4 years old. That's my own conscious memory, only really started when I was 4 that I can still remember. And then as I processed it a little bit more, and I thought about it a little bit more, and I started to pay attention a little bit more to what is the voice underneath my tension, rather than running away only and not addressing it. So if I had to leave, I would go to my room, and I would feel the tension, and I would just be like, okay, tell me What's the words underneath this tension? What do you want to tell me? Or even when I'm with her and I'm feeling tense, I would just listen out for, I would listen out for a voice underneath my feeling. And the voice that came up was something along the lines of like, I don't really like her, because I don't like that she gets to have everything, and I don't. She gets to assert herself. She gets to, say no so readily and so freely and easily. And she gets to have your patience. She gets to be heard. She gets to have choices. And she gets to whine. Actually, it's whining is like a form of communication, but she gets to do that. And I don't. I just have to be quiet. I just have to say yes. I just have to shut up. It's not fair. I don't like it. It's not fair, and when I didn't hear this over one sitting, so it was it's just listening, and then the words come a bit more, and listening again in another time, and more words come up. And as I started to hear these, I realized that, right, my inner child was the one that was tense around my daughter. My inner child was feeling hurt, not by my daughter, but the fact that my daughter was experiencing a life that my inner child could only dream of was a painful reminder to my inner child of what she really had missed out on. I think it was actually her grief. My inner child's grief, my inner child. It's like, on one hand, my inner child is so happy to see that, oh, this is possible, and like, Jean is a great mom, and I feel very proud as an adult that I am, that my daughter is so confident to speak up, so I have all that. But at the same time, I didn't realize how painful that would be for my inner child to witness, because she didn't have that. I didn't have that when I was young. And so, and we don't know what we miss out on until we see what we miss out on, right?
Yeah, and feel it. And she was
Exactly.
feeling it.
She was feeling it. She was feeling it, and she was grieving. So I kind of had to tell my inner child, like, I had to connect with her. I had to say, you know what? That all makes sense, and I'm so sorry that it took me quite a while before I really could get what your struggle was about. And I spent so much time thinking that, or rather, like, in my own fear of my inner child's anger, I was like, "Do you not like my daughter? Because we have a problem if you don't like my daughter, because I love her, So I kind of was like, "Oh, I don't want to listen to this. What if you're going to tell me you don't like my daughter? I can't disown my daughter." But I was like, "You know what? Like, that's not you. It's not that you dislike her, but you do dislike what she represents, because it's a stark contrast to what you didn't have. And I'm so sorry you didn't have this. I'm so sorry that I wasn't sensitive and attuned enough to your reality and what you're going through, in the midst of parenting my daughter." And I think that's what often happens for parents with trauma history, that their traumas can get activated very often, especially with childhood, their own childhood trauma. And if we don't understand it, we can re-traumatize ourselves by thinking like, what's wrong with me? And really speaking to ourselves in the same ways that we were spoken to when we were young, and re-traumatize ourselves that way. But thankfully for me, like, I do have some knowledge about inner child work, and I do have my own therapy as well. So that helped me to see it for what it was, and to connect, and have compassion really on on this part of me and my history that included a piece of trauma.
I think that that's just so beautiful because that is the way that we're able to heal our past in the present
Yes.
by attuning and giving them what they didn't have. And for her, even just the validation and telling her you see her and I think it's so important.
Yes. And I will also say that sometimes it suffice to just be a witness to our inner child's pain, to be a witness and to validate our trauma history. And sometimes it's also we need to take actions, because if it's a relationship within ourselves with our inner child, we don't just there are words of affirmation, but there's also like other love languages, and sometimes it's that it's taking steps as well. And so for my inner child, I kind of had to ask as well, like, is there any way that I could make you also feel safer around my daughter in this whole experience, so that you don't keep feeling like you're being neglected and my daughter is the only one getting my attention. And it was and her response was and the sense that I had, rather, which was my inner child's response, was this sense of like, yes, can you check in with me, especially when you're starting to get tense? Can you just check in and not shame me? But can you just check in because I might be struggling with something? Can you be curious and compassionate about that and check in? Another thing is,
I love that.
Another thing was my inner child told me she didn't like that my daughter kept like falling on my feet. There was something, it just felt very physically violating or assaulting to my body when that happened, even though obviously at a logical level, obviously my daughter doesn't mean to do that. She's young, you know, but it was just the sense of crossing my own physical boundaries, even with my daughter, that I didn't know. I had to also draw that kind of boundary. So I was like, okay, I need to also just draw some boundaries. And I had to tell my daughter, like, hey, you need to be a bit careful when you're walking around me. And when she comes too near and she looks like she's gonna fall on me, I'll be like, okay, go slow, steady yourself. So I'll do these things to kind of make my inner child feel physically safe as well.
Oh,
So
that's so
yeah.
good. That was great. Oh, this was such a great conversation. Is there anything else you want to add, Jean?
I will say that when we are able to connect with our inner child more, we will find ourselves also able to connect with other people more. So with regards to that parenting piece, like connecting with my inner child, I was able then to be more present with my daughter without feeling as much tension as I was carrying. So there's hope for any parents out there with a trauma history, who are struggling and who are feeling very triggered being around their children. There's really hope in healing, our attachment wounds and connecting with the wounded parts of ourselves. And on that note, is there time for me to maybe share maybe one other piece that came up for me as I was doing this work, this inner child work with myself as well?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead, Jean.
I just thought it might be a nice rounding to what I was sharing earlier about how when I was younger, a lot of my identity was based on external appearances and looks. And so because being triggered by my daughter this year, it also just kind of prompted me to kind of wonder like what happened when I was 2 or 3 year old that is making me so tense around her. Like, was what is that trauma that I went through? But truth be told, I don't know. I don't have any memories, but I did look up some pictures in my photo albums just to get a sense of like, what could have happened. And I came across a picture of myself where like I was probably 2 plus and I was wearing a bikini and I was standing on a stool And the moment I saw the picture, I instantly in my body felt a memory of being told to wear that bikini, even though I didn't want to, because I didn't want to expose my skin. But I remember my caregiver saying, like, Jean, somebody gave this to you. I don't remember her exact words, but it's something along the lines of, like, this is a gift, be grateful, put it on. And kind of, I was forced or shamed into wearing something that felt completely uncomfortable on my body. And to top it off, I was placed on a stool as well, like it was like a stage for me or something. Your dog is having a lot of empathy for my inner child, but
You heard that? I'm trying to keep him quiet.
yes, I did. Oh, I love dogs. Okay. But anyway, and I
So
thought it was
she put you on a stage, you're in a bikini, and you had a memory that you did not want to be, you didn't want to be there. You didn't want to be in that bikini or put on a stage with it.
Yes. And when I looked at that picture, though, I was very surprised at how. So I had the body memory of feeling violated, of being like something put on my body that I didn't want. But at the same time, I also had another immediate response to that picture, and that was disgust. I felt very disgusted to look at that little girl, and I also heard the words in my head, "You're ugly." And when I heard those words, I was just like, whoa, where is that coming from? Because those are really harsh words to say to a 2.5-year-old girl, and I was just like, whoa. But it came again. It was like, you're ugly. And I don't recall my caregiver ever saying directly to me, I'm ugly. But I do remember my caregiver saying things like, oh, when I first saw you as a baby, I did think that I did wonder, like, oh, you were quite an ugly baby. And my caregiver said it to me in such a lighthearted, she was laughing about it, such that I also felt like, oh, I guess that's a joke, haha, but if she did think that I was ugly, even if she didn't intend to hurt me with such thoughts, she probably carried those thoughts about when she looked at me, when she held me, when she, I don't know. But and the message will still come across in her energy in nonverbal communication that I'm ugly. And so the words were really strong. It was, you're ugly, you're ugly. And yeah, and I looked at that girl, and so I did some inner child work with that. I closed my eyes, and there are different ways to do inner child work, but I did. One way was I used my imagination, so I did some visualization. And visualization, for some of the listeners who are not very familiar with this, it's a lot like kind of closing your eyes, getting in touch with your feelings, and almost like you're passively watching a television program. You don't control the visuals, you don't change or direct the visuals, you kind of just watch. So I kind of did that, and I was looking at my younger self, and instinctively my adult self just came in through a rope, a blanket over her, to protect her body's discomfort. That came for me very instinctively. And I thought that I will instinctively carry her away as well, off that stage, that dreaded stage. But interestingly enough to me, I didn't. Instead, I found myself bending down, looking at her at eye level, and just saying to her, would you like me to carry you off? Like, I gave her a choice. And I didn't realize at that time, but I think that is what she really needed, because things were always being done to her. A bikini was forced on her. And sometimes even with our healing as trauma survivors, the healing might be good for us, but the way it's carried out, the process can be re-traumatizing if it's forced onto us, if that makes sense. Like, if part of our traumas are that we didn't have a choice, and we kind of force ourselves into our healing in that sense, like you need to heal right now, you need to do this right now to heal. You need, if we go at that kind of if we just go with like you have no choice, you have to do this because it's good for you, we are kind of re-traumatizing ourselves. And so I didn't realize that instinctively I had actually given her something that was breaking her trauma cycle by giving her a choice and asking her for her voice where she had no voice. I gave her a voice by saying, "Would you like me to carry you off the stage?" And she could then say yes or no. But my inner child didn't respond to me. She didn't answer that question. She just looked at me a little bit sad, a little bit ashamed, like her head was, her eyes were lowered, and then she said, "Am I pretty?" And when she said that, I was taken aback, Monique, because I was like, I was just like, oh my gosh, like I thought we were done with this. Like I thought we were done with this whole topic about how, about our externals being the most important, about pretty, like, but she needs to know she's pretty. And I was just like, okay, so even though like a large part of me feels like I have a very different relationship with what beauty is, clearly my inner child, this 2 to 3 year old girl, was still there. She was still traumatized by this. So I looked at her and I said to her, "Of course you're pretty." And then she said, "But why doesn't she think so?" And she pointed to my caregiver. And my heart just melted when she said that. And 'cause which little girl doesn't want their parents' approval, right? So I just looked at her and I just said, "She doesn't think you're pretty because she has been conditioned to only have one definition of beauty. She only sees beauty in one way, and you don't fall in that one category of beauty. You don't have, your looks are not defined in that, in the exact precise manner that she's looking for, in the way that her conditioning has made her to look at beauty. But there's so many kinds of beauty that she knows not of, and there's and you are beautiful." And when I said that, my inner child just, I could feel her just kind of melt and relax and soften. And then suddenly she looked up and she said, "Okay." And she kind of just like, and she kind of just, and she just bounced off the stage herself and the stool stage. And she just went off to play. And I was just like, oh, just like that? Okay. I was like, okay, that's, it's like she just needed that trauma, that wound to be attended to. And then she was fine. And then she could go back to being a child again, carefree, playful. And what I found after that was when I looked at that picture again, after I did this work and I looked at that picture again, I didn't hear those words, "You're ugly." I didn't feel disgust. And instead, like, I mean, as trauma survivors, we can't undo the trauma that has happened to us. And for quite a lot of us as well, we will continue to have some memories of it. But I think, like, I wanted to end on this note also because now when I look at that photograph, I have those memories of what was done to me. But I also have these new memories of my healing and me reconnecting with my younger self, and
That's lovely.
giving her what she needed. So there's trauma and there's healing, and it's like one hand is trauma, one hand is healing, and that's how we become more whole again. So
Well,
I thought I'll end on that note.
thank you for sharing that. That was really beautiful.
You're most
Okay,
welcome.
Jeannie, so tell us, how can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more about your work, if they want to follow you on Instagram? You've got such an amazing account.
Thank you. My Instagram handle, it's at Jean Psychologist, so that's one word. And my website is www.talithakumpsychology.com, and Talithakum is spelled TalithaKoum psychology.com. My website is still under construction, but we'll get there. These are just some details to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Okay, thank you, Jean. If you're looking for a safe place to connect, you can find out more about my trauma recovery coaching options on my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. I also have a Facebook and Instagram page at cptsdcoach.